British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been in various forms of trouble before, but he's a survivor. And after all, he made Brexit happen as he said he would. And the UK seems to be over the worst of COVID. Easing restrictions is controversial, and still over 300 people a day are dying, so who knows? Anyway, it's Partygate that has diverted the nation for weeks. The alleged COVID rule-breaking parties in Downing Street and elsewhere in the British government, and like all the best scandals, it's funny and serious at the same time. Mr. Johnson's claim that he was ambushed by a birthday cake on one of the occasions under investigation has caused general hilarity. But some say Mr. Johnson might have run out of road this time. Scotland Yard has opened an investigation, and top civil servant Sue Gray's report, expected any day, has apparently been held up, lest it prejudice that police investigation. Vernon Bogdanor is Professor of Government at King's College London, and he's with me on the line now. Hello.
Good morning. It's evening here, but morning, I gather, in New Zealand.
How important is this? I'll call it a scandal because that is what it is it not?
Yes, it's very important indeed, because it could lead to the resignation of the Prime Minister. And this is only the second occasion in living memory in which the police have investigated the Prime Minister. The first was in 2007, when Tony Blair was questioned about the supposed sale of honours. But he was a witness, so he wasn't accused of anything, and he wasn't questioned under caution. It's possible that Boris Johnson will be questioned under caution, and of course he's not a witness, he's actually accused of having broken COVID rules, though his guilt, of course, has to be proved.
And who will prove it? Sue Gray or the police? Because one would have to ask why the police got involved so late in the piece.
The police got involved after being told by Sue Gray, I think, that there were issues which they ought to consider. And it's for the police to decide whether offences have been committed and what punishment is appropriate for those offences. Now, Sue Gray has a wider remit because she has to consider ethical considerations as well. And the Prime Minister is also in trouble because the ministerial code says that any minister who's deliberately misled Parliament has to offer his resignation. Now, Boris Johnson did say that there were no parties, or he wasn't aware of parties, that the rules were observed and so on. And if it can be proved that he deliberately misled Parliament, as I've said, he'll be required to resign. And it's for Sue Gray to draw up the facts of what has happened. But as you yourself said, that mustn't prejudice the criminal investigation. It's not only into Boris Johnson, I should say, but also senior civil servants who were involved in a number of parties.
Who is Sue Gray?
She's now a permanent secretary, but she was director of ethics and propriety in the Cabinet Office. She's a very senior civil servant, near retirement, so her promotion prospects can't be affected, I think, by whatever she says in her report. And she's done previous investigations, two of which have compelled the resignation of cabinet ministers.
Can she be regarded as independent, however?
She's impartial. She's not wholly independent because she is reporting to the Prime Minister. And as a permanent secretary, her boss is the head of the civil service, the cabinet secretary, who has to monitor her performance. So it's a bit like marking your own homework in a way. And I think things would be better if someone from outside, preferably legally qualified, were to do this report. Because Sue Gray is in a difficult position. It's not easy for her to question what she is told by officials or ministers. She can't, as it were, accuse them of lying. And this was a problem that Lord Gait, the Prime Minister's advisor on these matters, faced when he had to look into another scandal, payment for the refurbishment of the Downing Street flat. It appears that Boris Johnson had forgotten about various emails which showed that he might have known who paid for the flat, and he told Lord Gait that he didn't know who'd paid for the flat. And Lord Gait accepted that. He didn't question the Prime Minister. It's very difficult to do that if you're not legally qualified, I think. But it now appears that Boris Johnson had forgotten, and Lord Gait accepted that.
If she can't accuse people of lying, how can she find out that, for example, Mr. Johnson misled Parliament? I mean, that is a euphemism for lying often, is it not?
Yes. What she will do is to lay out the facts, and it's then for Parliament to decide whether the Prime Minister remains or not. And the Conservative Party has machinery for removing a leader if they wish to do so. Now, this is right, I think, in a democratic system. It's not for a civil servant to say, an unelected civil servant, to say that a Prime Minister should go. And it's not for the police to say a Prime Minister should go. The police are there to see whether the law has been broken. The people who decide are MPs, and behind them us, the people, because MPs will be very heavily influenced by the attitudes of the public. If the public say this is a terrible scandal and we won't vote for you again until you change your leader, then the leader will be changed. But if they say, well, look, this is a passing phenomenon, it's not very important, there are other much more important issues like the possibility of war in Ukraine, for example, then MPs will let it go. So in the last resort, it's we the people who decide, which is as it should be, of course, in a democratic state.
Is it, though? I mean, it can't entirely be poll-driven. This is pending the police investigation, of course. But if it comes to MPs simply having to decide whether Boris Johnson is unpopular enough to ditch, surely that's not satisfactory. It needs to be established whether he has done wrong.
Well, that's, again, for MPs to decide. It's not opinion polls that would decide. It's the attitudes of constituents. If constituents write to their MPs and say, we are very disgusted because we observed the rules, often in very difficult conditions. We had ailing or dying relatives whom we couldn't visit during the COVID period. The Prime Minister should have observed the same rules. And if they say, well, look, we won't vote for you until you change your leader, that will have a huge effect. So it's a mistake, I think, to ignore and underestimate constituency pressure in a system like ours.
What are the mechanisms by which Boris Johnson could be removed by his own party or indeed by Parliament?
It's not as difficult to remove a Prime Minister, a Conservative Prime Minister, as some people think. To get a vote of confidence off the ground, you need 15% of Conservative MPs to write to the chairman of the backbench Conservative Committee, the 1922 Committee. Now, 15% is 54 MPs, and no one need know who they are unless they reveal their names to the press. They write in, and their names are not revealed unless they choose to reveal them. And if the 54 write in, there has to be a vote of confidence, and that, of course, is by secret ballot. Now, it's fair to say if the Prime Minister wins that vote of confidence, there can't be another for a year. If he loses, he has to resign and cannot stand in the leadership contest which follows. But it's fair to say that even if you win by an unsatisfactory majority, you're still in trouble. Theresa May won such a vote in December 2018, but she was gone by June the next year as a result of informal backbench pressure, and the leaders of the backbench committee went to see her and simply told her she had no support left. So there is a drip, drip, drip of lack of confidence, which could be very dangerous for Boris Johnson.
He's a survivor, though, as I said, is he not?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. He's often found out. He was sacked from the Times for inventing quotes. He was sacked from the front bench of the Conservative Party in opposition in the early part of the 21st century for lying to his leader about an extramarital affair. So he is quite easily found out. It's often said that he's a great survivor and very clever, but he's not clever enough not to be found out, and these parties are now public knowledge. And there's a particularly difficult issue for him because Of course, it contrasts with the iconic picture of the Queen mourning alone for the Duke of Edinburgh, and it's now known that two parties were held on the evening of the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral. Boris Johnson didn't attend those parties. They were attended by civil servants. And I think many people feel that goes a bit far, particularly when the court was in mourning and flags in government buildings were at half-mast. So these are very difficult issues, but they've all become public. So I'm not sure I would regard Boris Johnson as a great survivor.
But nevertheless, he is Prime Minister of the UK, QED.
Yes, he's achieved that position, but there have been a lot of difficulties and scandals. And as you said earlier, Brexit has now been achieved. So one of the motives for supporting him has disappeared. And it's fair to say there was never a lot of love for him. He was elected primarily, as you implied, because he could cut through the Brexit deadlock, which he's now done. So his position, I think, is very insecure.
You mean his use-by date has passed?
That is possible. And the Labour Party is now 10% ahead in the polls. And his position is very difficult. But it depends, as I said earlier, on whether the public regard this as a merely ephemeral matter, which has no fundamental importance, or whether they are struck, as it were, emotionally deeply by this, saying, we took great sacrifices at great personal cost by not visiting elderly, dying relatives and so on. And those who make the rules should also obey the rules. It's possible that the public may feel we've been taken for fools and we don't like it.
That's clearly your opinion as well.
Well, academics are perhaps not in a very good position to gauge public opinion, but there is at the moment some public anger and annoyance. Whether it will last is a question really we can't at the moment answer.
How's the Conservative press dealing with it? There's the usual suspects of supporting Tories despite anything.
No, they're not really. The press, I think, is often accused of creating opinion. I think it often follows opinion. And many Conservatives are extremely angry about this. So the press is not giving him wholehearted support. And there's a great deal of criticism of him in the press.
The inquiry, of course, is looking at a number of incidents. As you say, Boris Johnson is not accused of being involved in all of them. But as you say, civil servants were possibly involved. Do you have any problem with civil servants being named and shamed and indeed fined if found to be involved?
They're unlikely to be named. They will be subject to disciplinary procedures if they have done something wrong, but they're unlikely to be named in the report, I would have thought.
Is it possible, is it within the realms of possibility, that Sue Gray could find that none of the parties breached the guidelines to avoid unnecessary social mixing?
Yes, that's perfectly possible. The guidelines, you may say, are not wholly clear, and you could say that 10 Downing Street is not a public place. It's not a workplace. It's the home of the Prime Minister. And you could say, as Boris Johnson has said, these are work-related events. And part of work at the end of a busy day, people had a few drinks. She could certainly say that. Absolutely right. It's an open question.
So the police will be the arbiters, finally?
Well, the police, as I say, will determine whether an offence has been committed, whether the law has been broken. That is their job, and what penalties are required for that.
And their penalties go as far as fines, right? I mean, we're not talking about...
It's a fixed penalty notice. And the fine, it was originally £60, raised to £100. Repeated offences attract higher fines. But there's also the possibility, which some have mentioned, of an offence of misconduct in public office, which hasn't been used against any politician in central government for I think 200 years, but it was used recently against a local council. And some people have suggested that also is involved, but I personally think that's rather unlikely.
Why?
Well, it hasn't been used for so long, and it would be an extreme reaction. And unless there was something more than we've already been told, I think it would probably be an extreme reaction.
Dominic Cummins, of course, has been a thorn in Boris Johnson's side and is insisting that Boris Johnson knew more than he said he knew about various events. Dominic Cummins, of course, blotted his own copybook during the pandemic. It seems extraordinary that we are looking at these two men loathing each other, it's fair to say. That could be pertinent to any inquiry. I imagine the police will be talking to Cummins.
The two have fallen out, certainly. The police haven't investigated Dominic Cummings' own possible breach of the regulations, but it may be they will talk to him. We don't yet know. I don't know who the police are interviewing. Their investigation just started 3 or 4 days ago, and I don't know what they are doing. It seems on the surface it should be a simple investigation as to whether these events broke the rules, because the press have revealed more or less what the events were.
We've already seen a few Tories abandoning Boris Johnson. Are they predictable? Are they important? Are they the beginning of a landslide?
Right. Some are not predictable and some are important. Yes, Mark Harper, a former chief whip, for example. There are a few people, not many, and certainly not as many yet as 54. But the Tory party is notoriously secretive. And journalists have said that even some MPs who are proclaiming their loyalty to Boris Johnson are not really as loyal as they seem. And it reminds me of something once said many years ago in Egypt, in relation to a dictator of Egypt, President Nasser, in the 1950s, a long time ago. One general was asked what his attitude was to President Nasser, and he said it's one of total loyalty until the time for disloyalty arrives. And that may be the attitude of MPs for Boris Johnson. If they think they're going to lose their seats because constituents are writing to them saying we won't vote for you again, until there's a new leader, then they will act fairly quickly. They will respond to those pressures.
That seems very shallow, doesn't it? Do you think that that's a legitimate posture?
Well, I think that's... Well, it I think it's, in a way it's the right way to operate in a democracy, but you may say MPs should be more concerned with ethics than they are, but we have to accept MPs as they are.
If, and I'm compelled to ask you this question, I'm sorry, if you were a betting man, would you put money on Boris Johnson remaining Prime Minister in a month, 2 months? What's the crucial point?
It's difficult to put a time limit, but I think, let's put it this way, I think his best days are in the past.
That's a fairly safe bet, isn't it? I read his hagiography of Winston Churchill a while ago, which was an extraordinary piece of writing, and I wondered whether Winston Churchill would provide him with any solace at this hour.
Look, I don't think Boris Johnson is quite in the class of Winston Churchill, frankly.
Very good to talk to you, thank you. Professor Vernon Bogdanor, who is a political professor of government at King's College in London.